ready?
Yeah.
Hello and welcome to High and Low, a Kurosawa podcast, or Kurosawa cast, whichever you prefer. I am Spencer Seams, and with me, as always...
What? Just say my name. What? Why do I have to say my own name? This is ridiculous. Oh, hi, I'm Joel Torres.
So, what's up?
Nothing. We got to watch a really good Japanese movie I'd not heard of before.
Yeah, we did watch a good one this time. This is, well, spoiler alert, this is a recommend from both of us, I'm pretty sure.
Yes.
So, the movie this week, the movie for this episode is Pigs and Battleships. From 1961, this is the second half of the Yojimbo and Pigs and Battleships portion of the podcast.
Well, that's what it was already named. I guess they already knew what we were watching. Come on.
You people can read, I assume. All right, so any initial, where are we going with this? So before I get into the actual movie, when I was looking up Pigs and Battleships reviews, I came across a number of reviews for the movie Battleship starring Rihanna.
Oh, she wasn't... Was she in this one too? I wasn't...
and so
that a remake of this movie?
I think it was a reimagining.
Okay.
Yeah, totally different take.
It makes a lot of sense.
They took out all the prostitution stuff and all the stuff about black market pigs and replaced it with aliens or something.
Oh, the pigs are the aliens in this case, yeah.
Yeah, they replaced the pigs with aliens, and Rihanna was the Haruko of the movie.
It's all coming together.
Yeah.
Taylor Kitsch played Kita.
Yep. And
Liam Neeson was just there.
Yeah, he was there for like one scene.
Oh, he would have been the boss. Oh, my stomach.
No, he's too dignified for that. I can't imagine him being like that goofy.
Take these x-rays. Get them investigated. Number 201. I know these doctors are lying to me.
All right, so you want to synopsize?
I'll try to. It's
a complicated plot.
It is pretty complicated. Essentially, the movie is about... It's really revolves around two people. It revolves around Kenta, who is a young Yakuza member who is basically bottom rung and is, you know, has these dreams of climbing up higher. He's got a father who's a drunk and I think he's a fisherman, right?
It's not really explained.
Or he works in maybe doesn't he work? I'm not even sure anymore. But
mom just isn't there.
Yeah, the mom I believe is dead.
Probably.
But he doesn't want to have a hard life like his father, so he's doing everything he can, trying to act like a big shot all the time, and his main squeeze is Haruko, who seems like a nice girl who's into him for reasons. And
she has no real good reason to love him.
Right. Yeah, yeah. So the whole story is about these Yakuza trying to make money off of Americans and the situation that they're in with the Americans occupying Japan. And there's a lot of like people trying to make deals with food that's been rejected by the Americans, the rations, and sell that. And Kenta's big plan with his boss and a couple of the other gang members is that they're going to get a huge amount of swine, a huge amount of pigs. And since this is like a place where you can't really have meat unless you've got a lot of money, so they're going to black market sell these pigs and everyone's going to have a big payday. You know, we're talking 140,000 yens, which is probably like $16. No, I don't know how it worked.
I don't know either. But they're getting free food for the pigs from the army.
Right, right. But it isn't free because they're paying off this guy who is a former soldier who is also trying to act like a big shot, but later we find out he doesn't really have as much pull as he was saying he did and might just be scamming people for money.
Never mind. I'm getting characters mixed up.
Well, I'm talking about the guy who later speaks some English.
Is it the Chinese one?
He was talking to the Chinese guy in the bar.
Okay, yeah, I remember now.
And he left, and they're like, "That guy's a pig."
I remember that scene because, like, I haven't seen these characters in like 45 minutes.
Yeah, yeah,
it's been a while. I totally forgot who they were.
Yep. It's been like 2 days for me. there's just a whole bunch of characters that toss around. Besides Kent and Haruko, we've got that guy who, the soldier guy, who's is actually not that big of a character, but he's got essential parts to play. We've got Kenta's boss, who he is basically in love with. He's got undying respect for and will do anything for him. And his boss is a sickly man who is always on his deathbed, you know, and I'm doing the quotation motions with my fingers.
Well, he thinks he's on his deathbed.
Yeah, and there's always
it's a big joke reveal at the end.
Yeah, lots of prostitutes going around, and besides just regular prostitution, there's also deals being made with American servicemen that they're basically, families are selling off their young daughters to live with these people for like 40,000 yen a month, which is, you know, that's a pretty good amount for probably what they were living off of without that. But these girls basically become servile sex slaves or whatever.
Well, mistresses.
And yeah. Yeah. They're not going to be wives or anything like that. They're just they become their property while they're in Japan. And that's one of the Haruko's family is trying to get her to do that because I believe her sister is already doing it.
Yeah, her older sister is already a mistress.
Yeah.
And it's bringing in a lot of money.
And her mother just doesn't care. She just wants the money.
And they have like three other siblings that are very young in comparison.
Mm-hmm. But there are tons and tons of complications. It's a very detailed story. Haruko wants Kenta to run away from this with her, run away from the life, and Kenta will not give it up because he does not want to have a normal life. He doesn't want to have to slave to make money, and he's walking around dressed like a Pokemon trainer, and he's
with a hat that has a Confederate flag on it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Which is kind of weird.
Nice American. And he. There are other bosses that are involved, including his boss's boss.
That's a Chinese one?
No. I think I don't know if we actually ever see his boss's boss. I think it's just a guy who was on the boat that they went on who ends up killing that one guy. Or maybe it's the guy who shows up in the trucks to get the pigs at the end. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I need to watch it again.
I mean, it's really good. I will watch it again. So
it's not that it's overly complicated, but I think it's supposed to be as overly complicated. Right. Like, I think it's designed to be like that.
Right, right. It's a confusing lifestyle, especially for this. I mean, Kenta is probably played by a 30-year-old man. I mean, he doesn't look like a kid.
No. But he's supposed to be like 19 or 20.
Yeah,
he's supposed clearly to be. Like he's already paying a mortgage.
Yeah. And he's only been training for a few months. He only has a Charizard. He's
been Charmander.
Charmander. Sorry. And a Pidgeot or a Pidgey. And he's not going to be the very best. You can tell. He's just not very good at anything. He tries to get away with something. He gets caught almost immediately. There's people getting beat up, including him on occasion, where he's just useless.
He's a bad, he's a bad collector because he's trying, he tries to collect money from this family, and he gets scared off pretty quickly.
Right. And he, like, ends up giving money to somebody, doesn't he?
Because
he, like, feels bad.
Yeah.
So.
He's a gangster with a heart of gold.
So you can imagine what happens in this. We'll get to the actual ending details, but it's basically a story about those two characters and how crappy their life is.
Yeah, it's like I saw it as it's part like 40 screwball comedy, it's part a melodramatic romance, it's part Yakuza movie, it's part military movie, it's part post-war Japanese movie.
Yep.
Part satire, part comedy. It's just a whole bunch of things that really shouldn't work together, but somehow it completely works together.
Yeah. It handles some really intense subject matters, like Kinta and Haruko, right? Haruko, is that what her name is?
Haruko.
You know, at one point Haruko is pregnant and she just goes and gets an abortion.
She does?
Yeah. You don't remember that?
No.
He, like, goes to the... After... to Kinta's not, you know, there when she gets it done, but he goes and picks her up afterwards. You know, he goes... walks over to get her. Because, obviously, they don't have cars or anything like that. But, yeah, she's just like... like, oh, I'm pregnant. I'm just going to go get an abortion. Like...
oh, okay.
And Kinta's like... you know, he's...
He doesn't care about
her. He's doing that Japanese thing that the men do in movies to, like, be tough. You know, they don't show emotion. They just are lustful buttholes.
More or less. But, now I remember what you're talking about. I think...
it didn't strike you as a big deal?
No. I think I must have been writing notes.
Oh, I see.
Or something.
Yeah. It's, I mean, that's, you know, besides that, there's...
a lot of prostitution?
I mean, yeah. That, like, that part in the beginning when they roll up in the police car and start packing in the prostitutes in the area, there's a part just like that in the movie Gate of Flesh. Like, both of those movies start off with it. That's the way this movie starts off. Besides...
you think Gate of Flesh?
Yeah.
Isn't that really great?
Yeah, it was really good.
Yeah, it's the one good Seijin Suzuki movie, I think.
I don't know the man personally, so I'll take your word for it.
He made other movies that don't work. Anyway, yeah.
Are you sure? No.
I don't like his... I don't like his other movies that I've seen. I just like Gate of Flesh.
So, Kinta... keeps getting told he's going to be getting this payday at the end of the year, which he keeps telling Haruko in turn, oh yeah, don't worry, everything's going to get better after that. But another local boss gets out of prison and is like, I need to see your boss because we're going to have to talk about this stuff. And it's pretty... it must be like in have you seen Goodfellas?
Is that the one where they're making spaghetti and they kill a guy or something?
What the hell?
I don't know.
Okay, there is a scene in Goodfellas where they're in prison and they do make spaghetti. They make sauce, but...
I haven't seen it.
Okay. Well, in there, there's a guy who comes out and is talking... crap in a bar because he just got out of prison and he's like, now I want my peace. I went to prison for something. I, you know, basically taking a fall for somebody. And that's what I'm assuming that this guy does. Although we don't actually know what's going on. Later, he's just dead. Kinta goes out with a couple of the other gang members to a boat and they put over the edge a wrapped up body and it's this guy. And as they're going away, the other gang members say to Kinta, so if the big boss needs you to, you're going to have to be the fall guy. And don't worry, you'll get paid, okay? You'll just go to prison for like 5 years, okay? And so Kinta's like, okay.
Yeah.
So it's Kenta's just.
He's very stupid.
He's so stupid.
Yeah, like it's we're not being facetious. He genuinely is a very, very stupid character.
He's just a little kid. Like, he's playing a little kid so well in this movie. Like, trying to be tough all the time. Trying to act like he knows what he's doing. And it's just so obvious. He's just going to eventually get thrown under the bus or whatever.
Or under the pig truck.
Yeah, he's going to get thrown under the pig truck. So, yeah.
That's...
I mean, the funny thing about that dead body is they just toss it into the sea so to get rid of it, and they figure if somebody finds it, then, you know, Kenta will be the fall guy. But the person who finds it is Kenta's father. And that's a funny part, because Kenta's like, oh crap, wake up. Or his father is like, wake up, I found a body, you gotta go stand over here while I find a policeman. Kenta's like, ah, you know, he's sleeping. He runs out there and he just drags it.
That when his father discovers he has bloody feet?
Yes, that's right afterwards. Okay. He's like, you hit the body, what are you doing? And they get rid of the body by feeding it to pigs, as we all know is what you do nowadays. But I think that was rather progressive in 1961.
And then, naturally, the gang eats the pig that ate their friend.
Well, they start to until somebody tells them it might be the one.
I thought he said for sure it was the one.
Oh, he just says he put the pig into the pig feed. And they're all like, oh, no! Which is funny, because I don't know. I probably would think that was gross, too, but I don't know if I'd... I mean, it's a delicious pig. It's right there.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's... I don't know. It's filtered through pig, so I don't think it's cannibalism.
Yeah. I mean, if that's cannibalism, then I've been a cannibal many times over, probably.
Same here.
Mm-hmm. And... I mean, those are just a couple of examples. Like, I mean, those things are supposed to be funny too, but they're also like really tragic. That's what I thought.
Yeah, to me, it feels like a proto Coen Brothers movie.
Yeah, that's a good call.
Like the whole thing of getting the big payday, and it's like in a Coen Brothers movie, you know, if money, they ever talk about like a whole bunch of money, you know, if you see a couple. That money is going to get lost at some point, and it does, and then it won't matter at all. And like in this one, the whole big payday thing, like it, like to me, this movie merely felt like a Coen Brothers type thing, or I should say, the Coen Brothers are probably influenced by this movie.
I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, that feels. It feels Fargo enough in the way, you know, Kenta keeps having to handle things that I could see that. There's no police officer perspective in this. It's all Kenta, Haruko, and occasionally some of the other gangsters. We talked about it a little bit earlier. There's a Chinese gangster, the only reason I think we know he's Chinese is because occasionally he speaks Mandarin to another Chinese person, and if you're
watching, he kind of looks like Mao.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's racist. I think that. You know,
I thought he was designed to look like Mao.
No, you're just a racist person.
Okay.
Yeah, get out.
Mao
of here.
Means cat, and I think it's Mandarin. Mao means cat in Mandarin.
So you're racist.
Or it's Cantonese.
Cats, that's what you're saying.
Yes. Okay. Or it's Cantonese. I'm not sure which one. One of those two.
I don't know. I can't tell you. But this Chinese guy he has a lot of money, and so people keep going to him to like set up deals and stuff like that. And the thing about him is he seems like more amused than anything by any of the situations that are going on around him. Like, everyone's like, oh, I'm going through all these trouble and I have to get rid of these rations, or, oh, we got to feed these pigs. That keeps coming up over and over again. We got to make sure we have enough pig feed for all the pigs.
Mm-hmm.
And this Chinese guy, you know, he's hearing everybody out, and then they leave, and he's just like, these guys are stupid.
Yeah, he's kind of, I guess he'd be the audience character in a way of being like, oh, look, these idiots.
Yeah. He's some, you know, it's just another one of the characters that are interesting in this movie that makes the movie, it really fleshes out this world.
Yeah, like this movie, we didn't really set it up that well, but it's set in Yokosuku. I think that was it.
I'm looking right now.
But it's set in a very impoverished part of Japan that you can tell. Well, I think the movie was saying, like, part of why it's so impoverished is because of the war and because of the U.S. occupation.
Right, right. Of course, yeah. This doesn't have a very high opinion of the American forces
or the Japanese, because
it's like a pork town.
Yeah, a pork town.
Pork town. Yeah.
pork. Never mind.
Pigs on battleships. Pigs in Japan. Yeah, because the Americans we do see are
horny.
Mostly, yeah, they're looking for a good time, or they're bossing these people around, or they are being disgusting rapists. Which, yes, there's a pretty nasty rape scene in this
movie. But it's handled in a way that's, I guess, tasteful.
No, what? Why? Because they spin around the camera?
Yeah.
I mean, yes, we don't see three sailors rape poor Haruko, but yeah, I mean, it's obviously implied that they did. And I think they try to play it off as comedy too, because right after the spin out and then fade out and the fade back in where Haruko's on the bed, we've got the three Americans all in the shower together.
Yeah, that was,
which, yes, you can't help but laugh at, but
yeah, I was wondering about that. That a little aspect too.
I mean, it's one thing to be used to bathing together because you're in the military, but I mean, you're in a hotel room. Take your time, guys.
Is the shower that big?
It would seem pretty big there. Maybe Japan has huge showers.
They must, to fit three American sailors.
Yeah. All soaping each other up. I mean, Haruko, that was after Haruko finds out that Kinta is not leaving the Yakuza. So she decides that she's just going to throw everything to the wind. She's going to become one of these
mistresses.
And she goes out to party, gets drunk. That's how this all ends up here. She tries to take money out of one of the soldiers' pants, and she gets caught and gets arrested for it. And it's just such a nasty series of events. Like,
yeah, nothing good happens, and like, it's again like a Coen Brothers movie. Pretty much everything that happens to a main character is something bad.
Yeah,
but it manages to be tragic and funny at the same time. And I feel like in most cases it's meant to be like this. Both it must be darkly funny,
something like that. I mean, it's labeled as, I think, as a drama comedy. That's funny how stupid Kinta is. That's all I've got. And it's funny how much the boss is like, oh, my stomach.
Yeah, we should talk about him now. I believe we're introduced to him taking a nap because he's in so much pain I think they say he hasn't gone to a doctor yet. He assumes he has stomach cancer.
Yeah.
And so every time you see him, he's holding his gut like, I have stomach cancer. Oh. And then he finally goes to a doctor, and you learn it's just an ulcer.
Yeah.
But he refuses to believe it. And so the whole time, he's just playing up like, oh, I'm going to die soon. And everyone's like, no, you're not. And it's always a highlight whenever he shows up.
Yeah. His illness has gotten to the point where the other Yakuza bosses no longer want to deal with him, think that he's just an obstacle. They don't want this sick guy hanging around anymore. So at some point, we see him a bunch of times, sometimes doing, you know, gangster stuff, breaking in to like beat up somebody at the taxi station at one point. And he's like takes his gang members out to the bar, where he ends up collapsing, isn't it?
Yes.
And that's definitely where the pig was, when they bring in the pig and people pig.
Yeah. And there are a couple, there are multiple points in the movie where they've like shaken down like someone that owes them money, and he screams, "Let's all go get drunk."
Yep. And he also has a special affection for Kenta. He like is so worried that he screwed up Kenta's life, you know, but when the point that he thinks he's going to die, he's like, there's nothing I can do anymore. There's absolutely, you know, this kid screwed and I messed it up and I deserve to die, which it's nice that somebody cares for Kenta that much, but...
Well, his dad cares for him, but Kenta just doesn't want to...
Yeah, he's got a lot of people.
Yeah, he just is pushing away the people guiding him down a safer road.
And he's just surrounded by people who expect him to have this lifestyle, expect him to work with the Yakuza, not to try to do something else. You know, whether it's the people at the bar, the prostitutes, the woman that runs it, or the other gang members. Like, nobody gets another chance here. Like... Haruko gets treated like, oh yeah, you're this Yakuza's main squeeze too, so you're part of it. And she doesn't want it. Kenta has doubts, but he's, you know, he just doesn't know he's over his head until we get towards the climax.
Yeah, and Haruko the whole time is trying to persuade him to move to Kawasaki,
yeah.
And to live with her uncle, because he's a manager at a factory or something.
Yeah, he has a factory job ready for Kenta.
Yeah, and Kenta just refuses to, you know, be a sucker and have a normal job.
Yeah, I don't blame him too, so. I mean, it's a sad state of affairs.
Yeah.
It's reading on the historical context here on the Wikipedia page, talking about how World War II, significant blow to Japanese society, Great Depression caused many countries to take protectionist measures, which hurt Japan. So they were already in a bad shape when they freaking went into the war. Wow.
Mm.
And then the country demilitarized after
the
war.
Yeah, we talked about that in the Kevin episode.
And that's when the Yakuza started.
Had a resurgence.
Yeah.
And so, one of the... this in real life, one of the Yakuza gang leaders that had a huge resurgence was Yoshio Kodama. Do you know who he is?
I see his name right here.
I learned about him on the History of Japan podcast. I think it's still going, but I fell off a little. That's not relevant. Anyway, they had a whole episode on Kodama, and basically he influenced Japan by turning the government into what we'd consider a more conservative route over about 20 to 30 years by paying off senators. And so he pretty much like helps make Japan what it is now, in a way. And he was so... It's kind of like an Al Capone thing where everyone knew what he was doing, but you can't really prove it. And,
Yeah.
Okay. And, this is true. And so I used, side note, I used to write a column for Rhymes with Nerdy called This Seems Interesting, about stuff from history that most people don't really know that or isn't talked about. And I was going to write one about Kodama, but there isn't much information about him. And I wanted to write that article just so I could have a section on this very thing I'm about to say about Kodama. Are you ready?
Yep.
On March 23rd, 1976, a softcore porn actor who was popular in Japan flew his own plane into Kodama's house to assassinate him because of what he was doing to the government and politics. And Kodama survived someone doing a kamikaze attack on his own home. And the porn actor died, of course, and Kodama died in the 80s from, like, pneumonia or something.
Says a stroke.
Stroke, yeah.
After the Lockheed scandal, disillusioned ultra-nationalist Roman porno film actor Matsuyasu Maeno attempted to assassinate Kodama. Kodama. By flying a plane into his Tokyo house, kamikaze style, the attempt failed. Interesting. Yeah, this article on Wikipedia is only a few paragraphs. It's a like a tiny page, so there's like nothing about him. That's crazy.
Yeah, I contacted the host of History of Japan podcast about how to get information on the Yakuza, and he replied to me, when you start looking into the Yakuza, you'll start getting phone calls and people start showing up, so you can't find much about Yakuza.
That's interesting. So that must have happened to him.
I imagine he probably got some suspicious emails and stuff.
Cool.
Yeah.
I mean, not cool, but...
Yeah.
So, let's talk about the ending of this movie.
All right.
It all winds down to them not being able to feed these pigs because the person who was going to provide the food for the pigs ran off with the money that they'd given him.
And didn't he give the money to the Chinese guy?
He did something
with the money.
I don't know. I'm just talking about the American guy. He, like, went to Hawaii.
Or the guy. That guy.
Yeah.
I thought someone, but then someone gave the...
That's the big boss. That's the guy who shows up in the trucks later.
All right.
So he... Basically, they're going to get rid of the pigs. And boss's men, including Quinta, decide, okay, we're gonna get as much money of this as we can. So they tell Quinta, go to the farm with all the pigs. Wait there. We're going to show up in trucks.
We didn't mention it, but Quinta is the manager of the pig farm.
Yeah, he loves pigs.
Yeah, and he is very overjoyed that he gets to take care of all the pigs.
And wouldn't you be?
Nah, it's probably stink.
Yes, it does stink.
But free bacon.
I don't think he wanted any bacon. So, Quinta goes to right before this, Quinta decides he doesn't want to be in the Yakuza anymore, and he tells Haruko that he's going to leave, and he wants her to wait, they're going to take the train that they can, and Haruko says, okay, I'll wait for you. And so, Haruko's waiting at a train station.
And she's hiding because of
She's also hiding from her mother, because she was set up with an American soldier.
Mr. Gordon.
as one of the mistresses, and she's run away. So she's in trouble.
Yeah, because she actually agreed to be the mistress to Mr. Gordon, and then she ran away pretty much immediately afterwards.
Why do you like Mr. Gordon so much?
His name is Mr. Gordon.
Yeah? That's a terrible name.
That's how they refer to him.
Yes. So, Quinto is waiting at the pig farm, and a bunch of trucks do show up. But instead of his friends, it's the big boss, and he's like, okay, Quinto, we're going to be taking all these pigs, and guess what? We're also going to beat the crap out of you because we think that you double-crossed us for some reason, because we found out that you were going to try to steal these pigs.
Yeah, so I think it was a setup from Gunji?
Somebody.
Yeah.
I'm looking at all the other characters' names, and the only ones I remember are Quinto and Haruko. Gunji is the gangster in check shirt.
Yeah, I think he's the one that told. I can't remember.
Yeah.
There's a lot going on with this movie.
But they toss, so they get all the pigs into their trucks. They start driving, and they also toss Quinto into the back of the truck, who's
been
beaten to a pulp.
Yeah.
And they start driving away, and as they're driving away, these other trucks show up. Those are the gang members that Quinto works with, are now think that Quinto betrayed them.
So it's a double cross.
So we have a bit of a road chase. These trucks, half of them are full of pigs, the other half are empty. Quinto gains her consciousness and is hanging over the side and being like, "Hey guys, everything's fine. Like I tried to stop him," and his fellow gang members do not believe him. So they end up running into a main part of town. This part that's full of neon. It's the
strip from the beginning.
Oh, that's where the trucks came in to pick up the prostitutes.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Symbolism. It's circular.
Yeah. But Quinto, the two sets of Yakuza are about to start fighting. Quinto finds an automatic rifle. Actually, before that, they're trying to convince Quinto to to once again be the fall guy, but this time with no cut, like, because everyone hates Quinto. They all think it's his fault.
When it's not, he's
stupid.
He's an idiot that got caught up in something he shouldn't have been caught up in.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like Josh Brolin and No Country for Old Men.
Yeah.
And
Boss is nowhere to be seen. Quinto's boss is nowhere to be seen, mm-hmm. because he thinks he's dying and is trying to get somebody to kill him. But it turns out that he had the wrong x-ray, that he doesn't have stomach cancer. He just has an ulcer, like we said earlier.
Yeah, and it's revealed by he learns that the hospital bed and x-ray number
are not
the same thing. So he's in hospital bed 201, and so he begs Quinto to get x-ray 201, and it's a totally different person that had already died.
Yep. Yeah, so that's why Boss isn't there to straighten anything out. That's why they're going behind Boss's back to get rid of these pigs. But Quinto finds an automatic weapon. He threatens these guys. They're all trying to talk to him, but they're also all freaked out. Quinto starts releasing pigs. And he is just in kind of a gunfight. You know, a really bad gunfight, because he doesn't know what he's doing at first. He doesn't know how to get the gun to fire. He drops it and it starts firing. And he's shooting out neon, mm-hmm. left and right. He doesn't actually hit anybody else, but he does get hit a couple of times by people with rifles with pistols.
And it's a big standoff with the different Yakuzas, mm-hmm. and the police.
And all the time, all these pigs have been released, 400 pigs on set. So eventually what happens is
a pig stampede.
Kinta gets shot in the stomach. He stops fighting back. And the other gang members all run away because they're afraid. They're really afraid of these pigs. Which I guess if I saw 400 pigs running towards me, I would be freaked out. But it is pretty silly.
Well, yeah, and pigs can actually eat all of a human too.
They can or they can't?
They can.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like
I mean, if they're ravenous pigs.
Yeah, like
it's a good horror movie.
And Snatch.
Oh yes, I know.
Bricktop feeds pigs. Feeds dead by the pigs, so he doesn't get discovered.
That's what I'm saying. That's why I was saying 61 was very progressive.
Yeah.
We know.
Influenced Coen Brothers and one Guy Ritchie movie.
Yep.
The one good Guy Ritchie movie.
No.
He made what's the other good one?
Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels.
Okay, I haven't seen that yet.
I also like Rock and Rolla.
I do too. I forgot about that one. But I remember.
Yeah, no Sherlock.
I saw the second one. It's a movie. That's my review of it. And it has Jared Harris.
Yeah. But, so these guys all get trampled by pigs eventually because they keep running down alleyways and there's just more pigs. And
I think it's insinuated that the pigs are eating them.
They're at least attacking them, yeah.
Yeah, because they're generally terrified to be trampled by pigs, and some of them are bloodied. I'm not sure if it's from the gunfight or from the pigs.
I mean, they were smothered in pig oil.
Yeah, and there's
there's that scene where that poor pig has his face against the camera. I felt bad for him.
It's
also the actor is like,
it's a really good shot.
Yeah.
I was just like, it has to be seen to be believed.
Yeah. So eventually, Kinta wanders off. He's bleeding to death. He's been shot in the stomach, and he's like, it's like he's desperately looking for water. Which I think was it raining? No, it wasn't raining. Was it? That was a different scene. But he breaks into a bathroom, and these two people walk by that are like, oh, Kinta finally went crazy. Yeah, he's a legend now. And it's like, hey, Kinta, you got what you wanted, but now you're going to die.
Yeah.
Well, that's fun.
What was that?
Amber Alert.
Oh.
For Simi Valley. I don't live anywhere near there.
Side note, is that the valley in LA movies and stuff that they talk about?
Simi Valley is on the edge of the valley. It's on the west edge of it. Mm-hmm. So it's not quite. People, when they talk about the valley, they mean like Van Nuys, they mean Chatsworth, they mean.
Oh, okay.
I mean, there's a whole big old section, basically in between the 118 and the 405 freeways and beyond that, and the 101, which is a huge... I mean, the valley is a huge section as far as we consider it, the San Fernando Valley.
Oh, okay. I've never been to California, so I don't know.
Well, we live right next to it.
Oh.
Good
for you, I guess.
I even took pictures of that clown... from the liquor store in Clueless.
That's still around?
Yeah.
Huh.
I just happened to drive by it. It was in North Hollywood.
Oh. Cool.
What? Circus Liquor? Yeah.
Like same logo and everything? Oh, sorry.
Yeah, it's the exact same sign. So he finally got what he wanted, yeah.
And he dies.
Yeah, and he just dies right there. Haruko has got tired of waiting for him, plus her mother is, like, right there looking for her. So she runs off. She runs and sees this crowd now gathered around. She realized that something crazy went down. She's known something was going on with pigs, so she sees pigs, you know, a couple of dead pigs.
And pigs, you know, that cops that everywhere. Means.
Mm-hmm.
That means Kinta.
Yep. So she's looking for, you know, looking at all these Yakuza walking by, heavily injured on these stretchers. And finally, one of them has her Pokemon master himself, Kinta.
With the Confederate flag hat.
Yep. And her reaction is to start screaming, "You bastard," right?
Yeah, it's like, "You stupid bastard." You
stupid bastard. I mean, he's thrown away his life. He's ruined everything, basically.
But you know what? He died a legend.
Yeah. No one's ever going to forget his stupid face. And the movie tries to end on a happier note, because the next day, Haruko is getting set up once again from her mother. Mr. Gordon, the powerful Mr. Gordon, is coming to pick up his mistress. Mm-hmm. And Haruko's like, "You know what? Screw this. I'm leaving. I'm going to Kawasaki.
I'm going to work in a factory or whatever."
Mm-hmm. And adios.
She does.
Which is good. It's good to see that somebody can, like, after being basically thrown around and stamped on and disappointed over and over again, just not give up.
Yeah, it's a happy ending that is earned.
Yep. And then you hear some more marching band music.
Yeah, the music was very good in this.
Talking about the score?
The score and just like the use of like American military marches showing like the impoverished Japanese town.
Yeah.
Yeah, like this music, it was kind of on the nose, but I personally didn't mind it. I think it really worked.
I think everything worked in this movie. I thought this movie was excellent.
Yeah, it is. The only problem for me is the plot is just kind of overly complicated.
Yeah, but I don't think that took away from it necessarily, yeah. Because I think that this would probably reward rewatches in that way. Yeah,
like I wrote in my notes, like, this is a movie that probably needs to be watched multiple times to fully get everything.
Mm-hmm.
Like a Coen Brothers movie.
It's like, hey, did you notice Captain America was in the background here? I bet you didn't. Like, no, I didn't. Wow.
Yeah, there's a Avengers Tower in the background.
Yeah.
In the Baxter Building.
And the Suicide Squad shows up.
And there's Mark Spector, too.
And RoboCop.
And Ursula K. Le Guin.
And Danny DeVito? Why is he there?
And his ugly brother, Piano Man.
Wait, what?
Billy Joel is Dan DeVito's ugly brother.
So that's a pretty bold statement to say Danny DeVito would be, in that case, he would be the more attractive brother.
Yeah, he is, because Billy Joel is the ugly troll man.
I mean, he didn't used to be.
I think he... Every time I see a picture of him, I'm surprised how ugly he is.
He used to be a big shot, didn't he?
His song...
used to open up his mouth.
Sure. He looks like a troll man.
I mean, you know. And he's not so good.
Yeah, well, never mind. I can save that for after done recording.
Can you hear Sarah talking?
Yes, I can.
Hold on a second, then. You had to be a big shot, didn't you? All right.
So, I like the cinematography in this.
I had little numbers, and they were.
Why don't you talk about it while I put my mic on mute?
Okay. So the cinematography was a very, very active, and it wasn't like the older style of Japanese movies where it was not less active, but it was a different, is a more stationary style of using the camera, where this movie felt very modern and kind of like P.T. Anderson-esque, where the camera is very active and the camera is like another character that's walking around and moving and breathing in the whole world.
Well, you know, I saw some there. I did actually make one note about the camera position. It's the bar that they keep going back to that's run by this lady that Haruko, I guess, must work at.
Oh, yeah, her family bar?
Yeah. And there is this goldfish bowl that they keep putting in the center of the screen, and the way that it's framed is the bar is like on either side of the goldfish bowl, like stretching back, and that's kind of like a Coen Brothers shot, like a Roger Deakins type stuff.
Yeah. The fishbowl reminded me of another Japanese movie called The Pornographers, where there's a lot of, I think the movie opens with a shot on a fishbowl and men talking, and it closes with the same men looking at the same fishbowl talking, and then The Pornographers, which it's a very weird, dark family drama. I think it's from, I gotta look it up now. It's like 62 or 63. But in that movie, there are a lot of shots of fish bowls and fish tanks all over various scenes. It's very remind me of that.
And they have sex with these fish? Is that why it's called The Pornographers?
It's called that because it's about a stepdad figure who
Wait, I don't want to hear anymore. That's enough.
No, the stepdad is a pornographer. Because he's a sleazy guy and the mom
has two kids. Stepdad. That's what happens, right?
Yeah. And it's insinuated that he might be molesting his stepdaughter.
Oh, come on.
It's never shown. It's kind of insinuated.
There's goldfish that are also involved into these situations here.
You just see there are a lot of goldfish just featured everywhere in the whole movie.
Hmm.
It's just really interesting. And I feel like that maybe that was initially a reference to this movie, or maybe it just happened to be, let's just have a bunch of goldfish in this movie.
Shohei Imamura?
Imamura?
Yeah.
So, I'm not sure if you mentioned it, but he worked under Ozu originally. That's how he got into film business.
Mm.
And he's part of the Japanese New Wave that happened in the 60s. That was the counter to the Kurosawa, Mizoguchi, Ozu type movies.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I can see what you're talking about. Those are the movies that basically brought us together for this, because you and I both love these 60s Japanese movies.
Yeah.
They're so vibrant and alive. And this definitely fits into the kind of things that I was looking for.
Pigs and Battleships?
Yeah.
It also, to me, feels very Japanese.
I don't know what you're talking about. I got some French New Wave going on there. I got, I don't know. I know a little bit. But I did. There were some other things that felt really familiar to me. Like I've seen people influenced, or people who influenced this filmmaker. It makes sense that he was brought up with Ozu, because it is similar to his early spring stuff, his late spring, whatever.
Yeah, but the way the romance is like the center of everything. Kind of reminds me of an Ozu type thing.
Right. And the way people are just people in this movie, there's nothing.
Oh, yeah. They're a little over top, but but they feel like real people.
Yeah. There's no Pokemon trainers in Ozu, just in this one.
And he has a Confederate flag on his hat.
Stop it.
But he does. You didn't notice?
I'm aware. Yes, I did. I did notice.
It's kind of weird.
I saw it.
But around this time, Yojimbo came out this year, and for Kurosawa, that was a particularly high watermark for his career. And this was a breakout for Imamaru.
Plenty of room. I mean, yeah. those are both. Yojimbo is one of my favorites. I think we've talked about it before. I don't think you like it as much as I like it, but
I really like it. But I think Sanjuro is better.
Yeah, I haven't seen Sanjuro, so I'll make my decision later.
If I remember correctly, it's shorter and has one of the best fight scenes you'll ever see in a movie.
If it's shorter, I'm not gonna like it. Longer, better.
Oh, then you would like Dodeskaden.
Nope.
3 hours.
I like Seven Samurai.
3.5 hours?
That's correct. That's the standard by which I measure all movies. If it's good, it has to be that length. There are not very many good movies.
So, Lawrence of Arabia, Cleopatra, Stalker.
I am curious, Blue and Yellow, if you combine them together.
The Haruko, aside from being one of the leads in Onibaba, a really great horror movie from 60s Japan. She was in Dodeskaden.
That's the other one you were talking about.
Yes, that's one of my favorite Kurosawa's.
It's rated R.
Is it?
I don't know.
No.
Italian movies, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, that's a good one. It's 3 hours long.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's worth it. I think it's worth it just for this one particular shot at the end.
I mean, we're going to be watching that if it's a Kurosawa movie, so.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing that one again.
I don't really have a choice.
No.
You're holding the gun to my head. Let's see. An innocent witch.
What else is there?
1965. That looks good. So you want to talk about other movies that came out in 61?
I have a New York Times review for.
Oh no, I don't want to hear anybody pissing on it. Come on.
It's by Vincent Canby from July 9th, 1986.
Okay.
So I guess it was like a re-release or something.
As most of these turned out to be.
I read a couple times. I don't want to. There's nothing really that notable. There's no like notable like hate or love for it. He really likes it. He basically said it's refreshingly impolite. It's a culture. It's a really fun culture clash movie. It's equally anti-Japanese as it is anti-American.
Yep, I could see that. Well, that sounds like a well-worded review.
Yeah, he actually really likes it, and
I am not used to that.
Well, for the Yojimbo episode, they're revealing a little behind the curtain for the Yojimbo episode. Our old friend, what's his name? Grosley Crowder is back. He's the one that hated Seven Samurai. He also hated Yojimbo.
Yeah, he sounds like real dipshit.
Yeah, he says it's a ripoff of American Westerns and it's just mediocre and kind of. It's just nothing but cliches.
Uh-huh, and then he pooped in his hand and ate it. I know what's going on.
Yeah. I know what to expect from Crowder now.
So, 1961.
But you know what? The New York Times actually likes Pigs and Battleships.
Good.
Well, Canby does. I think Crowder was dead by then, actually.
Yes. He died choking on his own vomit.
Yeah, he got in. Yeah, he realized how wrong he was about Kurosawa.
No, probably not.
Yeah. I read up on him. He was a French New Wave guy. He really loved the Italian and French movies.
Well, I do too, and guess what? I also like Japanese stuff, so.
For some reason, he doesn't like Japanese movies. But he's rotting in hell or whatever.
Yeah.
for being wrong about Seven Samurai.
Japanese hell.
So, what other movies from 61?
Well, how many do you have?
I have three.
One, two, three. Yeah, there's only three that I really know a lot about.
I think we might cross over on one of them.
Well, which one are you talking about?
Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Oh, I've never seen it. Okay. I'm just kidding. Yes, I saw that movie once.
I love Audrey Hepburn, as I've revealed in the Godzilla episode.
Yes.
And
it's, do you love this movie?
I've been avoiding it because of the Mickey Rooney yellow face buck teeth thing.
Right, that's crappy.
That's really keeping me away from watching it. I'm but sure you've it's seen good. It nope.
Oh, then why are you bringing it up?
Well, because Audrey Hepburn. That's why.
Honestly, I don't like this movie. I don't like Breakfast at Tiffany's. I think that, I mean, Audrey Hepburn's fine. But like George Lord, who is
of the A-Team, of the A-Team,
yes, who's supposed to be the one who's like, they've got him matching up with her to like fall in love or whatever, like mm-hmm. that. There's just like zero chemistry between them.
Wasn't he supposed to be like I remember I read somewhere that he was supposed to be like the next big Hollywood star. And it just never happened.
It'd be news to me, but that wouldn't be the first time that ever happened. Or times recently.
Yeah, I think that's why you end up on the A-Team.
Someday Thomas Jane is going to be there. In lights. You wait and see.
What else do you got for 61?
Okay, after that I've got 101 Dalmatians, the Disney animated film.
Cruella de Vil.
Yep. I mean, it's classic. It's incredibly boring.
Is it? I haven't seen it since I was a kid.
I mean, there's a part where, there's tons of entertaining parts in that movie. Mm-hmm. But I think there's one part in the middle that I find particularly like boring, and it's the part where the puppies have already been kidnapped. They're being hidden out on some like farmhouse out in the middle mm-hmm. of nowhere. And we spend what feels like an eternity with the two crooks that are supposed to be watching them mm-hmm. while they watch a game show on TV. And I think it's supposed to be charming, and the dogs mm-hmm. are like talking to each other and stuff like that. But it's so like this is the part, if I were a kid, I would fall asleep. And as an adult, I definitely fall asleep. But I mean, it's still a great movie. I mean, have you seen 101 Dalmatians?
I haven't seen it since I was a kid.
Okay,
so I don't really remember much of it.
Well, there's some dogs in it.
Is it cringy with like weird racism or anything like that?
It definitely has. I mean, not that I remember. I think it might have like certain stereotypes, but that's about it. I don't think it's all white people.
No. I'll look up the cast, and I'm a little disappointed by it. There's no Sterling Holloway.
Yeah, he was dead.
No, he was not dead by then.
Yeah, he died.
He was the original voice of Winnie the Pooh.
Yep.
Nope.
Drop dead.
No.
Heart attack.
I don't know if I'm watching this old Disney movie because there's no Sterling Holloway and no Edwin either.
It's got Rod Taylor.
I guess, but I like Sterling Holloway.
He's in The Birds.
Rod Taylor?
Yeah.
He's also Churchill in Inglourious Bastards.
J. Pat O'Malley.
He is on The Twilight Zone.
He did tons of Disney movies.
Yeah, but Sterling Holloway is my favorite. I love his weird, wispy voice.
Who does he voice in a different one?
He's the snake in Jungle Book.
Oh, you said he was Winnie the Pooh, and he's his.
Okay. That's his natural voice, Winnie the Pooh voice.
He's in Robin Hood also.
Yeah. That really weird, wispy voice is his actual natural voice.
Cause what he was called in Jungle Book, that's right.
Yeah.
My favorite is the guy who plays Piglet, because that is also that guy's actual voice.
Oh, John Friedler.
Yeah, and he's in
Twilight Zone. He was in two Twilight Zones.
That was awesome.
he's in two Twilight Zones.
Cool.
And I've seen every Twilight Zone for a record. And so I like his voice too. It's because that's his actual voice.
Yeah, that's his voice.
And it's here. It's goofy. It's weird trying to take him seriously in a Twilight Zone.
Oh, dear, dear. So, what do you have one?
Where was it? Oh, it was A Raisin in the Sun.
Mm. Haven't seen it.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
Tell me about it.
It was one of the few things I was forced to read in high school that I actually really liked. And I only watched the movie, too. And I remember... cause in high school, I was the type of kid who was like, oh, I have to read something for class. Boring. I'm gonna read it, but I'm gonna hate it.
This is the movie with P. Diddy in it?
No. Has Ivan Dixon and Ruby Dee and Sidney Poitier.
Mm.
Ivan Dixon basically became like the TV version of Sidney Poitier. Of like, if you needed a dignified black man in your TV show or TV movie, it's Ivan Dixon.
I see.
He was in the Star Trek episode, the original series, where, like, I haven't seen it, I've only heard of it, where they purposely got him for playing, like, a Starfleet captain that is racist against Klingons. As a way of being, like, of stunt casting, of, like, this guy plays, like, civil rights, is, like, a activist guy, now he's playing a racist.
I mean... Captain Kirk was racist against Klingons. They killed his son.
I don't know. He's in some Star Trek where they stunt cast him as like a racist of some kind.
And they did that a lot.
Yeah.
The stunt casting thing. They try to redo it in the next gen and it just doesn't work.
Anyway, so yeah, Ivan Dixon and...
Oh, give me another one.
And Judgment at Nuremberg. It's exactly what you think it is.
Yeah.
It's 3 hours long, but when I watched it, it felt like an hour and a half. It really goes by quickly. It's Spencer Tracy.
Mm.
I like him. Not just because of the name. I think he's a really good... I just like his presence on screen. He looks like a normal dude.
Yeah, he's cool. Yeah, he's good. He's a very good actor.
Yeah. And, you get young William Shatner in Nuremberg.
No such thing.
Yeah, he must be like in his 20s. He's in like maybe two or three scenes as like the military escort on base or something.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the second, I think it's the second movie where Judy Garland was nominated for an Oscar.
Mm.
She got nominated for Best Supporting Actress. And if you ask me, she didn't really deserve it. She's kind of playing a cartoon character.
I mean, did she actually get it?
No, she lost.
Oh, okay, that's too bad.
Yeah, because, but...
She had a terrible, terrible...
life.
Yes, so she at least deserves an Oscar, for God's sake.
Well, she won one in 1947, I think?
Mm.
47 or 46. I can't remember.
I guess throw her a bone, whatever.
Yeah, like she's playing a Jewish woman that was sexually assaulted by a Nazi officer.
Wow.
But her accent is kind of goofy. It's really over the top and kind of takes away from it a little bit. But yeah, Judgment Nuremberg, if you want to see young William Shatner and Spencer Tracy doing his Spencer Tracy thing, it's a good movie.
Mm. The only other one I could think I would talk about is The Hustler.
Mm-hmm.
Paul Newman, Jackie Gleason, Piper Laurie.
No, I'm thinking of The Gambler. Never mind.
Yeah.
Is that a different movie?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
It's a movie about a man who is trying to be a pole shark and thinks he's amazing, but he's also a serious alcoholic and reckless. It has a lot of similarity. His character has similarities to the way he is in Cool Hand Luke.
Yeah.
Where he doesn't really give a damn, but the hustler, his character is a despicable person. Like, he ends up in this relationship with Piper Laurie's character, and he brings her down to his level to such a point where her life is ruined, you know.
Oh.
And he just kind of throws her away because all he really cares about is what he wants. And what he wants is to beat Minnesota Fats, who Jackie Gleason is playing in this movie. Does a really great job. At this, like, very powerful movie. Like, I highly recommend it. I haven't actually seen the sequel. Do you know about the sequel?
No.
It's The Color of Money, directed by Martin Scorsese with Tom Cruise.
That's a sequel?
Yeah.
Oh.
Hmm.
Hmm. I've heard of it, but I've never seen it.
Yeah. I wonder if it's any good. I assume it is. It's Martin Scorsese, but...
Oh, I just found another movie from the same year.
Oh, yeah. Tell me.
The Children's Hour, starring Audrey Hepburn and Shirley MacLaine.
No.
Yes.
Never heard of it.
It's a really solid movie about... basically, as core female, about female friendship and trying to save a school, and you get young James Garner in it. And it deals with LGBTQ themes a little bit. And kind of.
60s, huh?
Yeah, it's a little. In retrospect, not great, but given it's a movie from the 60s that got a major release dealing with. You know, like.
Yeah.
Having a gay character, it's pretty impressive. And you get young Veronica Cartwright, who was an alien, playing the other woman on the ship.
She played the alien?
She was the pilot. Oh. The other woman that was there.
Oh.
And she's on X-Files as Agent Spender's mother.
Oh.
Yeah.
Never heard of her.
Oh, she's in stuff.
One more for me. A Woman is a Woman, directed by Jean-Luc Godard. The reason I didn't want to mention it is because I watched it, and Godard is hit or miss for me. Like, there are some movies that I freaking love that he directed, but this one, I liked it, but I didn't really leave a lasting impression on me. I mean, it's got Anna Karenina, who is in a bunch of his movies, and everyone's, you know, French New Wave crazy about her, and if you watch her in any movie, you can see why. I can't even remember what goes on in the movie, why it didn't make that much of an impact. It just was a bit all over the place, I believe.
Well, it's French New Wave.
Yeah. But, you know, sometimes that really works for me. But in this one, I seriously just cannot remember what goes on in it.
No. I have, I've seen one Godard movie, Alphaville, which I didn't really like that much.
Oh, that's going to be on the podcast.
Is it?
Yeah, not this one, but on mine.
Oh. Well, as you know, I'm not crazy about French New Wave.
No, I didn't know that. What's wrong with you?
I've seen Breathless, Alphaville, and a couple others, and kind of not crazy about it.
Have you seen Two or Three Things I Know About Her?
No.
That's really good.
I was thinking of doing a special episode where you pick a French New Wave movie to convince me that I'm wrong.
I mean, I haven't seen that many French New Wave movies.
Or maybe have like another guest on who knows French New Wave and prove me wrong that
that's probably a good idea.
That I'm wrong for not liking French New Wave.
Let's see, I'm trying to look for a list of French New Wave movies to to see if there's anything. Here's a list of 89 of them. Yeah, I've only seen 7 out of this list of 89, including Diary of a Pregnant Woman, Umbrellas of Cherbourg, La Jetée. I don't think of that as a French New Wave. That is an amazing movie, though. Like, I can't recommend
that. Oh, wait, that's the one that's those photographs?
Yes.
I have seen that.
Le Cercle Rouge, Le Cercle Rouge. Cleo from 5 to 7, 400 Blows. I guess I've seen a bunch.
Okay, I do like one. I like the one that's photographed and the science fiction one.
Yeah, La Jetée, the one that 12 Monkeys is based on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I'm actually interested in seeing 12 Monkeys now because I like that short film so much.
Wait a minute, you haven't seen 12 Monkeys?
No.
Stop it. And by it, I mean the podcast, and go watch 12 Monkeys.
It's one I've always been meaning to watch. I'm slowly getting those down. I finally saw Surviving the Game 2 weeks ago.
That's not... No.
Surviving the Game is a good movie.
Yes, but they don't have anything to do with each other.
I know, but it's a movie I've been meaning to see for a while.
Well, good for you.
I think what scared me off
was that... I haven't seen Star Wars, but, I just saw... Angels and Demons for the first time, so that's, I don't know what you're thinking.
You got anything else to say?
No, not really. The only takeaway that I hope that people who listen to this get is that Pigs and Battleships is definitely one of those movies from the 60s that inspired us to do this podcast, besides, obviously, our love for Kurosawa stuff. It's got those gangster elements. It's got tough guys and idiots. It's got humor, that sense of humor that's kind of noirish and great.
Yeah, it's a Coen Brothers movie, not by the Coens.
Yeah, if that doesn't convince you, I don't know what to do.
And if you don't like the Coens, then why do you listen to this podcast?
I mean, if you don't like the Coens, that's fine. That's your prerogative.
I guess.
You're totally wrong, but...
Yeah. You got stuff to plug?
Well, the only thing I can plug is what I usually plug, which is my other podcast, Please Don't Send Me Into Outer Space, weekly science fiction and fantasy movie podcast. At the time of this recording, we just did a Beetlejuice, a Hot Tub Time Machine. What else did we do? Oh, we did The Fifth Element recently. But we're also doing more obscure stuff like this Italian Mad Max knockoff movie called A Man Called Rage, which was just a pleasure. Not because it was good. It was really bad. But it was such a pleasure to watch. Like, you should listen to that episode and go watch that movie on YouTube for free. Podcast is, you can find us on Facebook. Facebook.com/PDSMIOS.
And what's it called?
Please Don't Send Me Into Outer Space.
Okay.
Please.
I write for Cinema Knife Fight. I review old TV shows in the vein of horror and science fiction. I just, I'm just starting to get into the 80s, and I have discovered a show that I'm going to review a few times in next year, in 2017, called Misfits of Science. It's a weird show with, it's basically Fantastic Four, the TV show, but it's not Fantastic Four. It's a lot of fun. So that's going to be coming up soon. And for Christmas, I'm doing Home for the Holidays, which is, by the time this comes out, it won't be Christmas time anymore. But Home for Holidays is basically a slasher movie, but made for TV in the early 70s, starring a young Sally Field.
Those are the best kind.
Yeah, it has Jessica Walter from Arrested Development. and she looks the same, and she played an alcoholic again.
Does she sound the same?
No.
Oh, that's interesting.
But she pretty much looks the same.
Yeah.
And she's playing an alcoholic as usual.
Hello, I forgot to mention this in the episode proper, so don't mind interruption, or do, I don't really care. Anyways, so the parent for next episode will be 1960s The Bad Sleep Well. Its Kurosawa's very loose, not very loose, but that's besides the point. It's his take on Hamlet, which in relation to that, we have Shan Camp from Stage of Fools guesting in. Stage of Fools is a podcast on the E! Show, the Royals, which is Hamlet through the filter of E!, sort of, but kind of goes in crazy places, I'd expect. Anyway, so we have an expert on Hamlet and Shakespeare on, and Jigoku, which is a Japanese horror movie, which translates to Sinners from Hell. Sorry for interruption, now for the rest of the episode.
As a shtick.
Yeah, so that's coming up for Spencer's Sanctorum at Cinema Knife Fight. And there are other great columns in there, like Bill's Bizarre Bijou, which is William Carl. He's a really great horror writer. He reviews old, like, schlocky, like, cult movies like John Waters or like this kind of, like, the more trashy, sillier stuff that most people ignore. So I highly recommend his column. All right, so we have an email at highandlowpod@gmail.com. You can email us corrections, suggestions, or you want to say, yo, what up? No, you can do that. We're on Twitter at highandlow... I have to look that up.
Oh, yeah, I got it right here.
Okay.
It's at highandlowpod.
There we go. And we have a website called highandlowpod.wordpress.com.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a piece of fan art from Josh Hollis already. It's an alternate logo, and it looks pretty nice. You can go to the website and check it out.
Yeah, we were seeing when we were trying to find a logo in the first place. No, just kidding.
Well, we might use that alternate logo for, like, the special episode so people know it's a little bit different.
Oh, yeah, sure.
By different, it's a different logo.
Did you see that person responded to you?
Who?
The Schlock Treatment Podcast person you sent a message to.
Oh, no, I didn't know he responded.
Oh, I opened it, so that's probably why you didn't see that.
Oh.
Well, it's on their own Twitter.
Yeah, it's behind the scenes. Yeah. I want him to be on the High and Low episode, because... never mind. We can get to that. So, I have been Spencer Sames, hashtag ThugLife.
And I've been Joel Torres, hashtag LeaveMeAlone.
Alfida Zane and hashtag ThugLife.
Thanks for listening.
Hey yo, when I shoot a rhyme, I make you shudder. I should have shot an MC for trying to steal my butter. He's bitter cause I'm better, so now he drinks the bottle. I did a dirty duty with the cutie, she's a model. I met her at the party, scoped the body, name was Patty. She's pregnant with a shorty, said that I'm the baby's daddy. Just craved the sweet potatoes, 9 months later, had a daughter. Could have said, I'll see you later, but I stayed a child supporter. I didn't love the baby's mother, now she's colder. Cause I told her for the better that my other lady's name was Heather. She was like, whatever.